This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to have a conversation with America's premier integrative urologist. He's one of my favorite guests. He's been a perennial visitor here on Intelligent Medicine, bringing us the latest updates from the world of urology, and he's a true pioneer. He is the originator of something quite interesting. Back in 1998, he developed a Center for Holistic Urology at Columbia University. Now he's chairman of urology at Winthrop University Hospital here in New York on Long Island. And he's also here to tell us about a very exciting event that some of you can participate in. It's a men's health seminar at which I will be a keynote speaker. So you have all kinds of qualifications to your name. Dr. Katz, you've also written a book on integrative urology. That book is The Definitive Guide to Prostate Cancer. It's currently the number one selling book on prostate cancer on Amazon.com. So without further ado, I mean, I could go on and on with kudos and return the favor, because I recently was a guest on your program. By the way, Dr. Katz is the host of his very own radio program, my favorite kind of radio guest, because I know he is conversant with being on radio. He hosts a program that's heard early Sunday mornings at, is it 7 a.m.?
It is. It's 7 a.m. on Sunday mornings on WABC.
And well worth listening to. And believe it or not, I actually listen to your program because I'm an early riser.
Thank you, Ron.
And I tell you, it's quite fascinating because you really bring in some of the very interesting developments, both from a high-tech standpoint, because, you know, we're talking about promising new conventional cancer drugs, but also, you know, you bring a very, very delightful mix of common sense and natural approaches to men's urological problems to the fore. So
Thank you, Ron, and also it's a great pleasure to be here with you on the show today. I greatly appreciate the invitation. And like yourself, Ron, I guess we're both practicing physicians, and we do the research and we're interested in the science, but we're also on a day-to-day basis dealing with men and women and health issues and how to employ and integrate all these therapies. And that's one of the things that, you know, I love what you're doing, and I really enjoy my radio show on Sunday mornings, because we can talk to people, because this is what we do every day, right? Every day you and I are talking to people, and we're treating people and taking care of people. And so it's an easier translation for us to go onto the radio and relay the information in ways that I think people can interpret, can understand, and use in their daily life. And I think that's very unique. I think that's something that you and I share together.
Well, and then that's a good segue to telling us about the upcoming event that's sponsored by Winthrop University Hospital, the Men's Health Seminar, which is, I believe this is not the first time you've done it. This is an annual event that occurs around Father's Day, correct?
It is. And, you know, since I left Columbia University about 3 years ago, I've moved on to a hospital which is a clinical campus of Stony Brook. It's called Winthrop University Hospital. It's a 600-bed hospital on Long Island, and they do embrace integrative therapies, which I'm very proud of. And, you know, after leaving Columbia, we continued on with this men's health seminar. It's once a year. This year, instead of having it on Father's Day weekend, we're having it a weekend before. So it'll be June 13th. It's in a beautiful hotel, and I'm so excited to have you, Ron, as our keynote speaker. It's going to be an honor, and many of the people that have already signed up are just, you know, giving us great feedback that they're going to be able to not only hear you, but also see you and meet you and shake your hand and thank you for all you do for them. You know, it's at the Garden City Hotel, and as you mentioned, the website, people do need to register. beforehand, but it's pretty easy. It's called menshealthseminar.com. menshealthseminar.com, and you can see all the people that are speaking. You'll be the keynote, and there'll be discussions and panels from experts who deal with prostate cancer, who deal with benign conditions of the prostate. We'll have a talk on bladder cancer this year, which is one of the more common cancers in men. And, you know, Ron, we did a bladder cancer session last week at the hospital seminar for, you know, for lay people, and a wonderful turnout. About 50 people came and learned a lot about, in a half a day, about bladder cancer, which the number one risk factor is tobacco smoke. And most people don't know that. And
yeah, we have smoke doesn't just get in your eyes, it also gets in your bladder, right?
It's right. It gets into your blood when you filter it through your lungs, and then it gets into your blood, and then it circulates into your kidneys, and then down your ureter and into your bladder. And for men who are, you know, a little bit older, they have a prostate condition as well, and now they're not emptying their bladder. So urine is staying behind in the bladder. And those toxins from the tobacco smoke are sitting around, and they cause these mutations within the lining of the bladder, you know, and the next thing you know, you're presenting either with blood in the urine, or you could present with urinary frequency. You know, you're just going to the bathroom a lot. And urologists or people say, oh, maybe you have an infection, or maybe it's just a prostate condition. You got to be careful. And I always ask my guys, you know, do you have a tobacco history? Are you smoking? Oh, no, I quit. Oh, well, did you ever smoke? Yeah, I quit about 5 years but ago. I smoked about 20 years and, you know, a pack and a half a day. Well, wow.
Right, that's a cumulative risk, and it doesn't just go away when you stop smoking. But, you know, I think an important question to ask is, like, if a man, you know, a little blood comes out, you know, the blood comes out of the penis, you know, the toilet bowl is tinged pink, no big deal, or hey, get to the doctor, because this could be a harbinger of something very serious.
You know, one drop of blood, you think it's probably nothing, it might be, call your doctor.
Yeah.
Okay, I've had plenty of patients, Ron, over the years. I say, you know, doc, I just had one drop of blood. Then I go, I ask them, any history of tobacco smoke or exposure to any chemicals or dyes? They give me a history. It takes me literally less than 2 minutes for me to look in someone's bladder and see if there's something serious going on. And also, you may also see blood in the bladder, no cancer, and it could be something coming from the kidneys, blood in the urine. So you can't just, you know, forget about it. Call your internist, you know, say, listen, this is what happened. Let me come in. And what you think is blood maybe isn't. Maybe they had a whole big plate of beets last night. That happens to a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
you know,
that'll
the
scare the heck out of
you. You know, you have asparagus one night, urine smells a little funny. Next thing you have a lot of big bowl of beets, red beets, and you've got red blood, and, you know, it may be nothing. Have it checked out.
Absolutely.
I really think it's important, and it's a good point, Ron. Yeah.
You know, one thing that I really credit you with is advancing the concept, which is now really very much embraced by many urologists. It was a very daring concept, you know, 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Active holistic surveillance. It used to be called watchful waiting, you know, like, you know, let's do nothing.
Yes.
Don't just stand there, do nothing.
Yeah.
Prostate cancer is present, but you're supposed to do nothing? I mean, you always go after cancer, but you have been a voice of reason on that. So tell us about that.
Thanks. And I feel very... very optimistic about the patients today with early stage prostate cancer that don't need any definitive therapy. And you're right, a lot of the urologists now are understanding a lot more about prostate cancer and how it can be controlled with diet, with exercise, with some herbal supplements. But what we're able to do now, Ron, which we weren't able to do a few years ago, is really characterize these cells much better than we ever had before. We can look at the biology, which is a whole field now of prostate cancer genomics. And I've just actually last week presented
at the American Urological Convention. That was a big...
It was at the AUA.
Yep.
We presented on 4,000 patients with their genomics of their DNA, which can really appropriately and much better than ever before put patients into proper risk groups. So... now you have a patient that you think is low risk based upon their looking at under the microscope, and you can see the Gleason score of their cells. You think it, you can either confirm it, and a lot of times, you know, we do these genomic tests, and what we think we're low risk, we're not actually, and may actually need definitive treatment by looking at the DNA of the tumor cells themselves. So that has been something that this genomic testing has become quite popular in the field. The other is imaging, that we can image the prostate better than ever before with our MRI technology. And we can actually see tumors that need treatment and can be ablated. And I do a lot of focal therapy or focal cryotherapy where we can ablate these tumors, or many times leave patients alone and, as you point out, go on to active holistic surveillance of the patients that we see that get diagnosed with prostate cancer with lower PSAs, under 10, usually small areas of cancer, Gleason 6, that we don't see that well on MRI, don't even show up because they're microscopic, and confirmed by genomics, those patients are going on to active holistic surveillance, and those patients are doing extremely well.
Right. There's also this thing called PIN, which I guess is the male equivalent of like ductal carcinoma in situ, you know, these types of precancers that may,
yes,
you know, in the past may have gotten radical treatments, you know, prostatectomy, which resulted in urinary problems, sexual problems, and so on. These may be more amenable to a natural approach.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, a few years ago, I did run a clinical trial where we put men who had PIN, which is this precursor to cancer, who, you know, you have to have that. It's not a blood test. It's more of a pathological finding on biopsy. And you know the product, Zyflamend. It's made by New Chapter. They're a great company. I have no financial ties to them. I actually wish I did because they sold out to Procter and Gamble.
Yeah, that's their lead product. I mean, they're doing very nicely with that.
And they're doing very well with it. It's a very good product. It contains a number of herbs, and you know, they have been shown, and I've documented this as well in my lab when I was at Columbia to show that it has low levels of the ability to interfere with inflammation. That's really how its ability to work, reducing the, not the acute inflammation you get from your finger when you cut it, but more of a chronic pathological inflammation that can occur and is associated with specific genes that do get overexpressed. And this compound, which is anti-inflammatory and it's herbal, and we've shown in our clinical trial really had no adverse events, can shut off some of these genes. And it's fascinating. It's, I think, one of the few areas of supplemental, you know, integrative medicine, we were showing that a dietary supplement can interfere with the gene pathway in a particular organ. So,
right, it's an interesting mixture of things. It's got some skullcap. It's
really
got
is.
some resveratrol in it, I believe.
Yeah, scutellaria and ginger, ginger, and so yeah, I think it's an important product, and I do recommend it to my guys as well as, you know, the other things in the diet. I was able to go out last week actually to the nutrition conference headed up by Freddie Cronenberg and Andrew Weil. And wonderful attendance out there. They had 700 people at the conference. These were all doctors. Well, half were MDs, and the other half were either nurse practitioners or integrative physicians or dietitians, nutritionists. And they're very interested in knowing, you know, the role of diet and this active holistic surveillance for strategies for a lot of these men. And it's been my own practice, which is different than the Memorial Kettering practice or the Johns Hopkins. They biopsy men every year.
Yeah.
And I think that's overkill.
Yeah.
And I think it's wrong. And that itself, Ron, can cause a lot of inflammation.
Sure.
When you start putting needles in the prostate over and over and over again. And people, you know, patients are concerned, needle biopsy, can it spread my cancer? It's, you know, we all the doctors poo-poo that. I can't do anything. That never happens. But, you know, there probably are some cells that do leak out when you do a biopsy, and do those cells have the ability to metastasize? Are they different than just cancer cells that are sitting in the prostate? You know, will they get in the circulation but then not last very long? These are questions we just don't really know for certain. I do believe if someone has an elevated PSA and has and does warrant a biopsy, it should be done appropriately. A lot of us are doing what's called fusion biopsies now, adding the MRI.
Right, like a guided
and
biopsy.
And then you know, it's kind of like a targeted biopsy where you fuse the MRI and the ultrasound. That's right. It's much more targeted rather than just a random sampling.
Right, because that's a little bit like when we were kids, we used to play this game called Battleship, which we would fire
sure.
torpedoes blindly. We just do it with a piece of paper or on a game board. Now they do it electronically, but you just fire at random the torpedo to see if you get a hit. That's sort of the way multiple prostate biopsies work. Is you take longitudinal slices and you hope to hit the cancer, but you could miss the cancer or you could misestimate the degree of cancer.
That's true. And I love the battleship analogy because you're right on with that. But if you have a battleship sitting in the middle of that grid and you hit enough needles, you might be able to get it. You know, if you put in enough needles, maybe you'll get it. But then the more biopsies you do on people, well, you know, there are risks of infection and there are risks of bleeding.
I actually had a patient who came home, sat in the toilet, and began to literally hemorrhage from the penis after a biopsy. So it's not inconsequential. There can be problems.
Absolutely, and especially a lot these days when a lot of patients are taking blood thinning medication, you know, whether it be aspirin or, you know, Coumadin or Plavix or Xarelto, everyone seems to, as we get a little bit older, have either some doctor has recommended a blood thinner for them. And even though patients stop the blood thinners and we make sure that they do that, some of these things stay around in our bodies for longer than we think. And then you get a biopsy and you wind up with somebody that's bleeding for a lot longer than you thought. So I always try to err on the side of conservatism and have them stay off those blood thinners if they can, for a little bit longer period of time. Something to think about. And there are some herbal things that can interfere, I think, with bleeding. And certainly high doses of vitamin E have been looked at, and I think
it's actually the subject of a blog that I wrote this week, Supplements for Surgery, and in fact, biopsies are a form of surgery, and we kind of went over some of the evidence pro and con, and it turns out that maybe a little bit of vitamin E under 200 mm-hmm. international units is probably generally good for you, but above 400, maybe, certainly 800, that could thin the blood sufficiently to create some excess bleeding. Similarly, mm-hmm. Fish oil, and people have different thresholds for that too. So I wanted to, I got you on the line here, and I wanted to, and I know you've devoted entire programs to this subject, the PSA controversy. I know you have distinct views on that because some people have become PSA nihilists. The U.S. Mm-hmm. Public Services Task Force said, hey, it does more net harm than good, so let's not even do PSAs unless there's a problem. What's your take?
Yeah, well, it remains controversial, and I think that it's not, Ron, it's not the PSA test. Right now, it is the best test that we have. I have talked about this on the show, you're right, and I think, there are pitfalls, there are false positives with the test, but I don't think that everyone that, first of all, not everyone should get a PSA. It used to be under 40. I think if you're around 50, you probably should get your first PSA. And if it's okay, maybe you could go every other year. That's the current recommendations. Recommendations are changing a bit. So we're not saying don't get it. It's just who should get it and how often you should get it. And should you act on it? That's the key. And I see a lot of patients that come to my office that have just a little blip up in their PSA and they're super anxious and were told by their doctor to have a biopsy. There's actually some new blood tests that have just come out, Ron. I just came back from the AUA.
It's like proteomic blood tests?
Well, yeah, they're different forms of the PSA. Mm-hmm. It's called the FI score, the Prostate Health Index.
Oh, wow.
And then there's another score called the 4K score. They're both blood tests, and they're both looking at different isoforms of the PSA and uh-huh. can give us probability of not only does the patient have cancer, but does he have the aggressive form? And they showed multiple case presentations during the meeting of patients that you'd thought, their PSA is not that high. And then they did this score. It turned out to be positive. And then they biopsied him, and they were right. And they showed all these statistical models and, relative value units underneath the curve, ROC curves and things like that. But it does seem to be that we're moving in a different direction, that PSA in and of itself or different forms of PSA or MRI testing or genomics, or there's a new test. Well, not a new test. I've been doing it for a few years called the PCA3 genetic test, which is a urine marker. Just a urine biomarker. You push on the prostate. You press these cells
after a digital rectal exam. You press
correct.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. These are the things of the future, and this is where we're going. So I think what we've done in the past is extraordinary numbers of biopsies, and then what happens, as you know in medicine, is somebody gets told they have cancer, yeah. And I'll put cancer into parentheses, because many of these cells which are labeled as cancer, I think is wrong. I think that we shouldn't be calling them cancer, because their likelihood of metastasizing and leaving the prostate is so small. Yet patients are told they have cancer and feel they need to have immediate therapy. And that's what I think that's the disservice that we've done in the past. I think we have over-diagnosed and led to a significant number of over-treatment. And that's why the task force, as you say, gave it such a bad rating, because many of these treatments, unfortunately, and even despite the advances of robotic surgery and laparoscopic surgery and minimally invasive approaches, the man is, if you undergo radical surgery, many men are going to have a change in their life.
Yeah, and it could curtail their longevity in other ways, you know, that could reduce their confidence, give them depression, reduce their exercise performance, and so on.
Yes, and, you know, yes, and, that's all true. Beyond just the sexual and the urinary function, you know. So there are these new tests, and they're exciting. Currently, I do recommend my men to have a PSA. A lot of the times, that's because I'm biased, because I've seen, you know, in the era when we didn't have PSA, and a man would come into the emergency room with back pain and couldn't walk, and he had metastasized prostate cancer.
Right.
We rarely see that these days. Rarely.
Because men are heavily screened. They're heavily screened. They get more rectal exams, and they get more PSAs routinely.
Yes, they do. That's right. It's part of the, you know, one of the things that we look at. You know, hemoglobin A1C, you know, the cholesterol, thyroid test, PSA. The big test is testosterone. Gosh, we could do a whole show on testosterone.
Well, actually, I'm going to save that for part two. We're going to break in just a second
okay.
and go to part two, because we divide these podcasts into two. But one more question on the PSA. Is there an age, you know, now they're saying that there's a certain age where if a woman has had a succession of normal mammograms, I mean, it's insane for women to get, an 85-year-old woman to get an annual mammogram. So they're actually saying that past a certain age, the likelihood of developing an aggressive, life-threatening breast cancer is relatively low. So that past, I think it's the U.S. Public Services Task Force said, you know, age 75, after a succession of normal mammograms, no abnormal physical exam, women can forego the mammogram. Is there such an age for PSA, or should men well into their 80s?
We looked at that just recently, and I presented it at the AUA with the 4,000 patients that we looked at and their genomic testing, and we broke it down by age. And we were surprised to find that the men that had cancer, as their age got older, their genomic score went up, meaning they had more aggressive cancer.
Okay.
So I think, to me, it's not an age cutoff. If I have a 78-year-old male in my office tomorrow who's otherwise healthy, who's functioning well, and, you know, no other significant, you know, things that are going to affect his life within the next 10 years, I'll drop a PSA in the bucket. I will. I'll definitely do a PSA on him.
Okay, so you're an unabashed PSA tester, and that's your story.
Not
and you're
for
gonna
everyone.
Stick to
I'm not going to do it in an 85-year-old guy who's probably, or and especially if he has other comorbidities. No.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
that would be consideration. Say a person has, you know, they just, perhaps they have a form of cancer that they're in remission from, but it's a potentially life-threatening cancer at an advanced age. You know, why go mess with a PSA if you're looking for trouble
sure.
there? Yeah.
Right.
Okay, great. This is a good point at which to pause. We've started our fascinating discussion with today's guest, who's Dr. Aaron Katz. He's at Winthrop University Hospital. He's chairman of urology there, and we're also giving you word about an upcoming men's health seminar. We'll tell you more about it in part two, and we're going to focus on the controversial issue of testosterone for men. Is it safe? Is it right? Should we be giving it? I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.